Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
All right, you're very welcome along to our Saturday panel. 53106 is the text number. We're live on all our social channels as well. Facebook.com/offtheball, YouTube.com/offtheball, or get us on our Twitter page if you have any comments at all. And we're building up to the All-Ireland Hurling semi-finals, and I'm joined in studio by two Galway men and one Clare man sandwiched in between, but he's big enough to look after himself, so we won't worry too much about him. Tony O'Gregan, Anthony Cunningham and Derek Honan, thanks a lot for joining us in studio. How are we keeping?
Good, no, Nathan, thanks very much.
Are you excited about tonight?
Yeah, I think it's the two matches over the weekend. I think they're going to be really close affairs, and I think the four best teams in form have arrived into the semi-finals playing probably a newish brand of hurling compared to what we've been used to the last 8 or 10 years. So how them contests transpire, I think everyone is really excited by it.
You're out of the scene a while now, and you've spoken on air with us before of the difficulty initially of coming to terms with not being part of an inter-county setup and your identity being forged as part of that. When you go to a game this evening, are you a lot more chilled out? Do you feel you're removed enough at this stage?
Yeah, I think definitely. You know, over the last 2 years, Nathan, I've probably slipped into the supporter role and I'm able to just really sit back and enjoy games, where it was a different emotion for maybe 3 or 4 years after leaving it, where I suppose the regret and fear of missing out, and that was probably the overriding thing if they did win, that you'd missed out on it. But
how did you feel when they did win last September?
Just complete relief, I suppose.
Right.
As a county, you know, if you think of 87, 88 kids that age who were 10, another 30 years onto that, they're 40 years of age now. So there's a huge gap of, you know, people from 0 to 40 there who've never seen Liam McCarthy really in Galway and not experience a win like that. So I think for the sake of sport in the county, we really needed something like that to bring it to a new level. And the place has been manic, and the interest in hurling has been manic, especially at underage. Now the cool camps and stuff, the numbers are through the roof, and the interest in all the clubs on the ground has gone mental now, so it's great to see.
Last Saturday we were doing a panel on retirement and players who were forced to retire early, and they were all very honest in that they all felt a little bit bitter at what was taken away from them, and looking at players of similar age who'd gone on and succeeded and not been part of it for various different reasons. And it's a hard thing to admit that there can be jealousy there at times. Anthony, when you were there last September watching these players who you'd brought through, so many of them finally get over the line, is there a part of you that's thinking, could have been me, should have been me?
There's always that when you're either a player or a manager or whatever, but for me it was savage relief. And I was just so happy that the players had got their just reward, really. And so it's going back to what Tony said earlier, if you had one wish, it would be to every player that gave their life, like Tony did here, played at centre-back for Galway for years, and was an awful, awful hard luck, really, in a number of matches, close calls, beaten in a few All-Irelands. And I suppose I was, you know, a hard job for the manager as well, as you do have to have players, you know, it's a revolving door as well. Some players come in, they give their service, and you move on. But I was lucky enough, I was born lucky, I'd always say that, to have got a couple of medals and had a great innings at minor, under 21, up at senior, and a huge number of years in that. But you do feel a bit of sadness when you get into your early 30s, and when you sort of, you know, you have to walk away from it, or are asked to, you know, that you're not getting your place as is usual or whatever. But there's still a chill there when you go to Croke Park today. When I go in there today, like it's the same for any of the players, Derek or Tony or whoever. Like there's this tingling in the spine. The memories are massive, and it's such an arena and such a cauldron, and it's there. And you just wish to be. I'd love to be 22 or 24 and back out there. It's the only wish, and we just loved it. The training, the modern day players are going. I wish I had that every day now. I'd be big into training and, you know, well being and all the additional stuff that comes with sport now, and the levels that it's got to now, new types of hurling now, really there's different angles to it. You just love to be doing sport as a full-time job. I wish, I know Tony is, but Derek and I have to run out every Monday morning and pay the mortgage, but it's just tremendous. And, you know, GA get knocked on a lot of things, but what I've got right is definitely this is like a mini World Cup now that's going to run of hurling, that is going to run every summer. I think the number of games has been massive. We were in an era that had one or two games. You played the first Sunday in August. If you're lucky enough to get through that, you played on the first Sunday in September, and that was it. It was wrong, And today, I think they have the right amount of matches. Maybe the sequence of them might, they might put a few little gaps in between them, and maybe one semi-final this weekend, another semi-final next weekend, because you know, it's they're only teeth and problems, but I think they've got the format right. It's a mini World Cup every year now.
Yeah, just on that then, while we're talking about the structure of it, because we've spent probably the first 2 months of the championship raving about hurling and questioning the structure of the football championship, and now we're into the real good stuff with the football and the Super 8s and questioning why we have two All-Ireland hurling semi-finals in the space of 24 hours. Your thoughts on the changes to the structure of this season, Derek? Is this the only slight flaw, that it's too condensed?
I wouldn't have a major problem really with the two games on this weekend. I mean, it makes for a great weekend in Dublin. Like, we'll get
an excuse to stay up. Dark, is that what you're saying?
we'll have a great game today and make a weekend out of it, stay up for the game tomorrow. I'm happy enough with the way it's gone, to be honest. And in terms of the structure in general, I'm a massive fan of the way it's set up this year, and as Anthony says, the kind of a World Cup feel to it, where there's games every weekend and high quality games every weekend. So I similarly, I think the one thing that I probably would tweak would be just to make sure that no team is going out more than 2 weekends in a row. That's probably, I think most people have commented on that, and it's probably something they will look at, because it is, I suppose, a distinct advantage. It fell perfectly for Clare because we had the 2 games break and the 2 games. So I suppose if we could arrange it like that again next weekend, or next year for ourselves, it would be great. But I do think, in fairness to all teams, it probably should get that break in between.
You were both involved, Tony and Anthony, in teams that were involved in the round robin but didn't make it through the round robin. Tony, you've been involved with the Tipperary Hurlers, and Anthony, you're with the Dublin Hurlers. 4 games means that actually you can't have any real excuses as a group, that sometimes when it's straight knockout, a little bit of luck, a referee's decision here and there is something that can stick with you for 6 months, a year, and you can be bitter about it. Actually, over 4 games, you have to hold your hands up, I guess, and go, we just weren't good enough.
Yeah, I think, like, if you don't qualify after 4 championship games, there's a reason behind that, and there probably is 50 reasons in a team dynamic. But going back to Derek's point there, I think there's a bit of space that needs to happen, particularly in the Munster Championship, where after your 2 games, you're getting that window of a breather in 2 weeks again. Because for lads in professional jobs, like, you've probably a lot of lads in fairly tough careers and professions, Monday to Friday, maybe you're getting on a bus Saturday to go away and play a championship match with Tip, wherever it is, and getting home late Sunday evening, and you're back into that again. So the space in their week to mentally and emotionally and physically recover from that kind of a 7-day lead-in, and to put that back 4 weeks in a row, I think it was very hard on the Tip lads, and mentally staying fresh as well as physically is a big omen.
And did you notice a change this year? So you're working with Gerry Hussey, you're the team psychologist. Did you notice an extra strain, an extra pressure on players, that guys were taking more time off work during the week trying to get the recovery perfect?
That's an individual thing, like, but I think even from the whole management team, you know, to review a game on a Monday, you know, you have opposition coming down the road again on Sunday. So there's very little extra you can do with players around that, because you're going to overload them with information then, and they've enough stuff going on in their own lives. So it's getting that balance right, what to do on the field on Tuesday and Thursday, who to pull back. There's a huge amount of monitoring on it. So I think to give everyone a space in that 2 week block would be great, to let lads back to their families for a weekend and let them calm down and get their rest again, and get management teams a chance to actually assess the first 2 games properly and move into the next phase then after that.
How different did you notice it to be, Anthony? So obviously you're working with Pat Gilroy, and it was a change anyways. It was his first season in with the Dublin Hurlers. But from when you were Galway manager and going from more of a straight knockout, all right, there was the back door as well, how you went about preparing for games, because I do remember the Kilkenny game first up, and you went so close, Dublin, to winning that game. Part of the talk afterwards was that maybe Dublin had spent 3 months thinking about this Kilkenny game and hadn't thought about the 3 games that were coming afterwards.
I don't think so on that point, but for us, the difference was it was very enjoyable if you were playing 2 Sundays in a row, because you didn't have that good of a game, or if you want to improve a player or sit down with him, go through his game. He really had only a couple of days really to say, well, I'll sort this next weekend, and players really enjoyed that. You didn't train hard during that week. It was all recovery. It was mental, physical, you know, ice baths, cryo, whatever. The medics were really top notch, really, and worked really hard during that week. But it was sitting down, I mean, I suppose management worked quite hard as well, because you were analysing, you know, the next team up. But for us, it was Wexford. We probably had a bit of work done before that. Even now, this championship, when we're not involved, we're probably We'll do stats on all the matches. We'll video all the matches and have it ready for next season as well. So there's a huge amount of work that all teams now do. So that part's enjoyable. You sit down, you analyse it with the players, you break it out. So they weren't working that hard during the week. And that, I think that's what professional sport is in both rugby and soccer, as we know it. Whereas all the hard work was done the months before that, and particularly over the winter.
So would you have sat down on a Sunday evening now, as compared to getting together on a Tuesday as a management team, when you've got together Sunday evening, quickly watching back the game?
Yeah, and we would have probably even the week before. So if we're playing this Sunday, and we'd finish training on the Thursday or Friday, we probably could have spent Saturday looking at the team the following weekend. So you're constantly working. The video analysis has gone through the roof. It's really, really good. And I mean, and picking out clips. I mean, you're very good at doing it here and off the ball and all the parts that work well and don't work well. One thing for me, again, looking at other sports, would be the refereeing. And I think the GAA needs to help the referees a bit more. And I'm not here to bash referees, but I think technically, I think they have to get a bit stronger. I think they should be fitter. And I think if there's anyone to get paid or get time off, I think it should be the referees. I should try and bring them to another level. And the technology that has been used again in the World Cup, I think there's parts of that. On tight calls for the last 5 minutes. Today, if it's Hawkeye, I don't think Hawkeye interrupts the matches.
Well, if the decision is right,
exactly.
That's all that matters.
But it doesn't take too long. Now, if there's a decision in the finish of a match, or maybe in the last 10 minutes, let's say, and the referee can stop it and it's checked and thought, did I get that wrong there? Did I miss something there on that? And maybe he missed a free in. Maybe it was Tony Regan hanging off someone there.
It never happened.
Goal or vice versa.
Yeah, like even the David Reedy red card this year, like if that was able to go to a VAR type scenario, like it's solved in 10 seconds. Like,
solved,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny with the Hawkeye, like anytime there's a game in a stadium that has the Hawkeye, it's generally used, which would give you a fair idea of the amount of times that they don't have Hawkeye available. Like they're not fully sure. Like there must be.
And Dickie Murphy, the guy who runs Hawkeye in Croke Park, he radios down to the referee. I don't know if a lot of people know that. So if there's something that's dodgy, he'll say,
let's have a look at that.
Or sometimes you see him checking out something on the other end of the field and he goes down to his umpire. So how did he know that? He doesn't have eyes in the back of his head, but he's told that. Okay. So there's a lot from the linesmen. And communication has improved in it. Mm. I'm just saying, with former players, I think, put a group together and try and help them to get another step, because I do think they're left out in the cold a bit.
Last week in the Football Championship, obviously, there was an incident involving Kevin McStay, and he's received a 3-month ban. He's accepted he deserved a 3-month ban for putting his hands on the officials. And we had Kieran McGeaney in last week, and he was making similar points to you, that he feels referees and officials and the general attitude at times of referees and unwilling to discuss things is something that needs to be approached, that they should feel able to talk to players, able to talk to coaches. Do you find that there is a good dialogue between referees, between linesmen and officials and managers while the game is going on?
Depends on the referee. Yeah. I would know Fergal Horgan is during a match or even at half time going on and off. He's well able to converse in the same way as we're conversing here. And he said, no, he would say that was definitely a free. I was close to it. He was too high with his elbow. So quite a lot of the refs are fine, but there are others who just, you know, they're just too big to talk, which is wrong. Players
Do they ever talk to you before the match? Because obviously rugby is very good at a referee coming in ahead of the game and saying, this is what I'm going to penalise you on. And then you've basically no excuses. And we look at a Monday and see who the referee is for a rugby match. You kind of work your game plan out for that. Does that happen?
It happens informally or probably incorrectly, in my view, in that you would get a referee off on the QT to say, come in, tell us what's being said in Croke Park.
There's no consistency.
So this year, for example, with the second hand or anything high with the tackling hand, if there was anywhere above the shoulder, that was really a yellow card straight off, that they were hugely afraid of impact, concussion. Probably last year it was anyone pulling a helmet.
And have they been consistent on that?
I think they have, to be fair to them, but there might be a lot of people that don't understand, players and managers and coaches as well. So I would say communication has to get better.
Do we need to get rid of the coaches off the sideline?
Well,
fiery ones like yourself.
Yeah, well, whenever threw a football.
He was just handing it back to him.
I know Kevin very well, although we were totally out of character, and there'd never be anything really, really bad. Never. Anything. I mean, it's a hot situation though, and it's there's quite a lot of guys fired up there, but I don't think it's unnecessarily bad, and I think it's good for the game.
Yeah.
And
what's
I
going on in this picture up on the screen?
Oh, this is.
There's Davey.
Is it, you're on to ask Jim McCarron there. You give a free there. It's a league match, I think.
That was a well deserved free, I think.
Yeah, it's a
league match.
It's a point, a dubious free there to draw the match.
You're the peacekeeper there, yeah?
There was no doubt about that free. No.
So then, the refereeing and official, though, maybe they will sit down at the end, and that would be such a huge step to go down some sort of a VAR route, because we'd probably have the same issue again of. It'll work at Semple Stadium, it'll work at Croke Park. But one of the great things about the Championship this year is going down to Cusick Park, going down to some of the provincial venues, the county grounds, and the atmosphere that they generate, going to Parnell Park. Like, the atmosphere that first day against Kilkenny was one of the best ones of the Championship all season. It simply costs too much to implement.
It does and it doesn't. If you look at the overall spend today, for example, or what the revenue is generated from, and these games... Everyone puts their life on hold. There's professionals of all sorts, you know, giving input, a massive input to teams, medical, the costs, and the costs on players' lives, on management, and the revenue that the GAA generate. I think X amount of that should be put in to help the referees. And I'm again not bashing, but it's to improve it technology-wise and see can you get it better.
I think even to make the point, there's an education piece for players and management around the rules, and I put my hand up, I didn't know them particularly well when I was playing. And I think if you had a thing like on a Monday night where a referee was on a TV series with two of the managers and explained maybe the four or five decisions that were came up that were, you know, contentious at the time, and the public understand what he saw at the time and what the rule interpretation is, well then it might educate the supporters a bit more, the players a bit more, and the management more. And maybe even Croke Park inviting in a couple of managers once a month to sit in on the referees panel and how they're adjudicating decisions. And, you know, if you're able to educate the managers, they're going back to the players and the coaches and implementing on the training ground, so it doesn't become such a contentious issue then in the big days.
Does that not happen? Do managers not go in at the start of the season? And
it used to happen years back. It hasn't happened, from my knowledge, in the last 10 years, since 2012. Right. I haven't been at any of those at the time we were with Galway, but back in 2005, I was started off with Roscommon and other hurling teams, and there were nights. And
would there be agreement among the managers on what was a foul and what wasn't?
I remember one or two heated debates with a certain Kilkenny manager.
Let it go.
Yeah, let it go, let it off. But look, in general, I mean, James Owens refereeing there today, to me, these guys are top class. What I'm saying is, let's try and
help them.
You know, it was an unfortunate situation on Alan Kelly, who's a fine ref, really, and a guy who's trying to get up to the next level on it, that happened this year. And, you know, had there been a better protocol of checking out, was that a goal or a point or was it a square ball, I don't think that incident would have happened, and Alan mightn't have to work that bit harder. And I felt sorry for Alan that day. But it was just the environment needs to change, I think.
How do you find going to Croke Park this evening, Clare's first time back in Championship since 2013?
I'm really looking forward to it now. I've really enjoyed going to all the games this year as a supporter. Like, I definitely feel as though I'd love to be playing, obviously, and there's that sense of missing out that Tony spoke on earlier. But for me, I'm delighted to be going along and watching as a supporter as well, and especially with Clare, we're waiting so long now to get back to this stage, and you'd be just hoping that they'll make the most of it now.
What's the one abiding memory from that Saturday night?
From the replay that I learned, this was from myself personally, just the goal I suppose they scored would be my standout moment for that. So I wasn't on the field all that long, so it was nice to be able to make.
Were you able to appreciate it at the time that you just scored a goal winning an All-Ireland final?
Yeah, it was huge, and I suppose it was a real just sense, an overpowering sense of emotion really at the time. And obviously it was great to score the goal, and then we kind of knew at that stage the game was won and we'd won the All-Ireland, so it was an unbelievable experience, I suppose, at the time. Yeah.
How are you getting on replacing the buzz of pulling on the county jersey?
There's nothing really that replaces it, to be honest. You never get that same high, but probably you don't experience the same lows either. But I've listened to a lot of retired sportsmen talk on it, and I think the sense is really that you just have to accept that you can't replace it, and just, I suppose, make the most of other parts of your life.
Did you take a clean break Did you, or do you keep in touch with the players still? Do you still have a good sense of what's happening in the squad?
I wouldn't really have the inside the scoop on anything. I just wouldn't, I know from being involved myself, I wouldn't want to be, if I was playing on the team, I wouldn't want to be telling lads what's going on inside, you know. So I would meet up with, a couple of lads right, a good bit, but I generally try not to push them too hard.
Go on, tell us what they're saying.
I try not to push
them
too
hard. Are the match up today, you know, Derek?
I know what I do, but I don't know what the lads, I generally don't know what the lads are going to do. Like, I mean, I'd say they're probably going to line out the way they're picked. Like, I probably myself would switch around maybe a small bit.
Second early to centre back.
I would do that. Yeah, I think it depends as well. When I went down to Leinster final and Galway Kilkenny and how effective the long high ball into Johnny Glynn was in the first half, and I actually think that it would suit Cleary very well to be marking if Glynn was in on the edge to be marking him, and I think similarly we'd get a lot more out of Davy Mack if we had a month and a half back line. I think they gave up on that experiment a bit too early this year. I thought he was settling into it and maybe he wasn't playing. I actually thought he was playing well, but people were giving out a small bit. But I think he would have, if he was given the year there, I think he would have been a really excellent centre back, and that's where I would have huge time for him. I'd probably be rate him highest out of all the lads. So I think if we could get the most out of him, it would be at centre back.
Highest number of possessions the last day. He was the player on the ball the most. Maybe once or twice he probably didn't use it as wise that he's able to, but by God, is he able to play it long, play it short?
Yeah, and that's the thing.
You could see him at centre-back.
What was the main criticism during the league, that they abandoned it?
I don't know really why they abandoned it. I thought it was working quite well, and I saw Cleary playing full-back for UL as well, and he was quite effective in there, so I'm not really sure why they abandoned that, but there was just talks around the county that they should switch it back, and then they did, but it wouldn't have been what I'd do.
Yeah. On the Galway side of things, you look back to last year, and all the talk this year is, can they go back to back? Can they build a dynasty? Are they going to be one of the great hurling teams and win multiple All-Ireland titles? But going back 12 months ago, Anthony, the build-up to that game felt very different for probably a number of reasons. They were going in as favourites for an All-Ireland final, which was quite unusual. And also, after the death of Tony Keady, there was so much emotion around the team. And that team of 87-88 was very much the fore in the weeks leading up to it. Everybody was out talking, everyone was reminiscing. There was an awful lot of nostalgia, and they dealt with that emotion. Did that have an effect, do you feel, on the performance last year, and have they been able to carry on the momentum?
I think it helped. Sadly, it was a really, really touching time and really, really sad occasion, but it definitely helped, I suppose, Copperfest and the whole county, and channel that energy, and the players and management have to take great credit in the way they handled it as well. And they would have silently used that as a massive, you know, motivation aspect as well, and to be remembered, and to properly take the place of the 87-88 team that was too far away, and now we needed the new breed.
Yeah. And was it a weight off their shoulders then?
Most definitely.
People aren't talking about your team anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And look at these players. And as I said earlier, it was just really unfortunate. So many great players have gone between then and now, that are as good, if not better, than the present players that didn't win the Celtic Cross. But for Galway, I think the maturity they sat down at the start of the year, and these guys are very mature. They're playing. Some of them are, you know, trying to get into their fourth or fifth All-Ireland final. They'd have played seven or eight All-Ireland semi-finals by this evening, and that you can't replicate that. That brings great, you know, you build great confidence as a result of that, and a great learning process. And they're very mature, and they've sat down. I mean, the likes of David Bourke, Joe Kenning would have sat down with the team and said, "Listen, as we're 28, 29, 30, we're not going to get a chance again. We're now on top of the wave, and we have to press home now. We really want to win." And I think that, more than anything, is very evident this year. To me, even the evening we played them in Salt Hill, and it was, you know, a game, you know, that both sides were one through and one out, but it was still a high class game from where I was looking at it. And but Galway's ability to score very fast. The next thing, they're 2 points up, 3 points up, and like the Kilkenny teams of old. So their ability to score very, very quickly from any angle. Dar talked about the long ball to Johnny Glynn. They can also play through the phases, the short ball. So the variety of play, and, you know, the Carl Mannions the Niall Buck who isn't playing today, their ability to come deep and win ball in the middle third as well. Yeah. So the big question is for me, can the Clare defence handle the Johnny Glynns and the Joe Cannings, Conor Cooney, who has a score to settle, I would imagine. was unfortunate to be left off the last day. Conor Whelan, so they're really, really on top of their game, mm. and they score at will. That's the big thing. They're going to score very freely today. And can Clare defence hold them?
There's a lot in that. We need to take a quick break. We will get into it. Get your text in as well. 53106. We're joined in studio by Anthony Cunningham. You've just been listening to Dara Conan and Tony O'Gregan. The Saturday panel brought to you this afternoon with Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products. In the Ladies Senior Football Championship, a repeat of last year's All-Ireland final today, at Dublin leading Mayo by 2-5 to 7 points. The goals from Niamh McAvoy and Noel Healy. They're into the second half of that one.
Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
You're very welcome back to the Saturday panel. Don't worry about it, Tony. Don't worry about it. That is Tony O'Gregan, who's sitting alongside me in studio for our Saturday panel. Dara Conan is in the middle and Anthony Cunningham is here as well. And we're looking ahead to the first of this evening's All-Ireland Hurling Semi-Finals, Galway against Clare. It's a 5 o'clock throw-in at Croke Park. Dahi Regan will be there for us for the evening as well. Tony, with your psychology hat on, the mentality that's needed to go back-to-back, because it's something actually that was thrown at the Tipperary hurlers a lot, for all the great teams they've produced over the last decade, the inability to retain the title, and is it down to enjoying the celebrations too much, or how it all breaks down? When you look at this Galway team, do you think they're ticking all the boxes of what you need to be to retain a Liam McCarthy?
I'd say the first day against Kilkenny has probably shaken them up, that they need to turn up at a right pitch every day, and if their work rate and intensity isn't right, that everyone in the championship is capable of beating them. And when they dialed that up then the second day, you saw their hurling one out. But if they're off a bit intensity wise or work rate in the forward line, they're giving everyone a chance to take them on and beat them.
Is that the worry for everybody else, Derek, that the Kilkenny game was a bit of a kick up the arse that they needed?
Yeah, I suppose they probably did need that, in fairness. And like the second day, they had some patches where they were unbelievable in that second game. And I'll be hoping that they won't reach that same level today. But if they do, they'll be very hard to stop.
Mm. Looking at the previews in the papers today, Anthony, it seems almost they're starting to get annoyed down in Galway about being talked about as a big physical side in every preview for a game, and a lack of appreciation for their skills. But there's no getting away from it. This is a monstrous team that if it comes into on a rough old evening in Croke Park where the rain is coming, it's slipping and sliding, that if it turns into a right battle, they can take anybody.
Well, they're very strong, physical, tall, but they're also very, very skillful. Mm. I mean, you take the likes of Joseph Cooney, we won't go to the top players, Cathal Mannion, their touch, as an example, Conor Cooney. I mean, some of the scores that Conor has got, that he'll trap a ball with one hand, coming at huge pace, left and right. I mean, there's the skill level of players. So they're in abundance on the Clare team as well, and on the Cork and Limerick teams. But Galway are hugely skillful as well, and I think that's the likes of Doughty as well at full back, and Pádraig Mannion. I mean, their skill level. We saw John Hanbury the last day, some brilliant touches and some brilliant flicks. So today, I think Galway's skill level is really, really top match.
I think their striking is so good as well. Like, and it was really on show last year in the All-Ireland final where they scored the first 10 shots they had or something like that.
Six wides in the whole match.
Their striking is their skill level as well as their physicality. That's what makes them so good. But a strange thing to be getting annoyed about to be telling them that they're strong and tall. Like,
you're really picking holes when it comes to that. The quality of their striking then, is that a result of the physical strength and the fitness of the team, that they're creating opportunities for themselves, they're in a better position?
Yeah. A bit of both, I'd say, but I'd say skill, I said from day one, but I mean, I would say all the forwards are talking about they're as good on their left side or their weak side as their strong side. Cathal Mannion, don't know which is his strongest side, as an example. Niall Bourke can come in, he'll always score. Jason Flynn, I'd say in any of the matches that have come in, their skill level left or right in the air. And these are just these are players that will come in and contribute today. But I mean, you take the likes of Conor Whelan. Probably his strength, and you know, he's probably unmarkable now. As if a ball is out in front of him, you'll just have very little chance, because he's strong physically, but his touch is so strong as well.
How much of that skill level is just pure natural talent? How much of it has been forged in training over the past 2 or 3 years and bringing Galway to the level where they are now, winning All-Irelands and fully expected to go and win another one?
There's no one born with this skill, Nathan. I think if you go back to Conor Whelan, he got a chance in the 2015 All-Ireland on supposedly his weaker side, and the ball barely dribbled into him. Murphy, now off that same side, he's able to hit a ball from 50, 60 yards out in the sideline. So Conor, I'd say, has put in a huge amount of work away from the training environment to bring that up to a level that's county standard. And I suppose the players are lucky enough now that they have an environment where they've 25, 30 players at a really high level of physicality, fitness, team play, tactical, that I'd say every training match, every training drill is just up and up and up. So that's causing lads to get to a new level all the time in training even. And that whole standard been driven Tuesday and Thursdays and coming out now in a team performance Sunday. So there's a huge amount of individual work put in, as well as the team environment been right as well.
I think a lot will say it's because I'm so physically strong I can get through, but if your touch isn't good enough as well, if there's a ball dropping, or if you're flicking a ball, or if you're killing a ball dead, you won't get out of trouble. It's a split second. You'll have a Clare guy or a Kilkenny guy in on top of you, and you're nailed, really. So their touch is getting them out of trouble, as well as their physical strength.
It is still a bit premature to be comparing them with the great Kilkenny side, but so much of what's said about them, even there when you're talking about having 30, 35, 40 players, that they learn so much in training, which is what the great teams do, that they're not just taking it on what happens on a Sunday, that actually you're going in on Monday night or Tuesday night, and a guy who's 28, 29 on the panel, he's ripping into it, and he's not that far off. And it feels as though Galway have that sort of depth now.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be getting carried away, Nathan, because, you know, last year Galway got over the line by a point against Tip, and, you know, we could be sitting here saying, what's the story with Galway now? But they're after putting a few consistent performances back-to-back since Micheál came in the last 2 years, but yet they've only won All-Ireland once. So a defeat this evening, you know, they're straight back to ground zero next January, and there's doubt there, and there's lack of confidence maybe in the group again. That
questions
you have
over the mentality.
Exactly. So this can change overnight. And if you're not right on any given day and a couple of percent off, Clare will step up and take your plate. Cork, Limerick are already through it as well. So, you know, I'd say within the playing environment themselves, they actually realise that, you know, this is so competitive over the last 2 years of championship that, you know, Tip and Waterford going out so early in the championship, both are in All-Ireland finals the last 2 years, and they were gone by June this year. So I think the whole face of hurling has changed so much, and any one of 6 or 8 teams have a real chance of winning on All-Ireland. And I think it's brilliant for supporters and brilliant for players too, because probably when we were going out over my 10-year period, a lot of the time, you know, Kilkenny were really, you know, 8 or 9 points most teams, that's how close you were getting to them. And even you could hurl brilliantly for 63 minutes against them, and the next thing that have won 5 raked off, and you're going home going,
they'd win a match at whatever time nearly they decided.
Yeah.
They just were so clinical.
One flourish. And
yeah, they're probably a bit like the Dublin football team now, or the Kerrys back in the 70s. They were just a phenomenal team, and that was, for all the rest of us, so unfortunate. But Clare have had an Indian sign over Galway. Clare have won more championship matches and All-Ireland semi-finals against Galway in the last 15 years than Galway have. So it's a huge, huge one today for Galway to try and win that, because Clare, 2013, but back, you know, when they won their double All-Ireland, they beat Galway those years up along, so they won't fear Galway.
2004 as well, wasn't there? 2004.
Matches that Galway would have fancied themselves to win. So I think, yeah, very, very close today. It'll be 1 or 2 points, and it'll be really, really close.
I want to play a clip from this week's OTB AM. The Wexford captain, Matthew O'Hanlon, well positioned to talk about both these sides, having faced them in the championship this season. He talked about the differences in facing Clare and facing Galway.
I would say probably the most difficult team that we played against would probably be Clare, because of the way we set up. And I suppose Clare would be familiar with the type of play that we would usually associate ourselves with setting up with the extra defender at the back. And the type of players that Clare have They're very good at working the ball out, playing short 30, 40-yard passes to hand and avoiding extra defender at the back. So Galway against us, they're a bigger physical team. They went more direct route. When we played them in the championship in Wexford Park, they had James Skell with the wind behind him, landing his puckouts on the 21 with Johnny Glynn in full forward. And then they got 5 or 6 points from the breaking ball there. Whereas Galway more orthodox, they're are more tactical in how they attack us and use space and the pace that they have in their forward line to get the better of it. So definitely the more difficult team to set up in Clare.
Okay, so Clare actually offer you like a very different challenge. You kind of know exactly what you're going to get with Galway and you can just match up against that. But Clare, I guess, take you out of your comfort zone a bit.
Yeah, definitely. Like if you look at, take Clare's forwards, for example. So you have John Conlon and Peter Duggan, both 6 foot plus. But the other four forwards are all small, skillful, very fast players. So Clare play to those strengths. They try to isolate John Conlon in the full forward line and try to get quick ball into him direct. And then the rest of the players feed off of him. Either he scores directly or assists Podge Collins or Shane O'Donnell to his side. Then you have Tony Kelly who gets on loose ball in the middle of the field and attacks and runs the players. Whereas Galway's 6 forwards, they try to win their own ball and take their own scores. Whereas Clare are very much work together up front and have a clear defined tactic in getting the ball into John Conlon. Whereas Galway don't isolate one forward in particular.
So on what Matthew was saying there, if you stop getting Clare getting the ball into John Conlon, what else do they have? What's next? What's plan B?
Tony Kelly. Well,
I think Tony is going to have a huge game today if Clare are going to be successful, and I think he's well capable of it. I mean, he's really come back into form. I thought he was absolutely excellent against Wexford. So he's going to play a major part in how well John plays as well, because the last thing you want from a Clare point of view is Tony coming too far out the field and Grode being able to pawn him off on Johnny Cohn or David Burke while he sits in front of John.
So Grode ain't going to move no matter what?
Well, I would say you could move him laterally, maybe. But if Tony will need to maintain a presence at centre forward and be moving Grode to the side as much as he can. But I say, Grode is going to want to sit in front of John and in front of Dahi Burke. I'd say.
Yeah, that's the go. We're not going to change that. But yeah. Tony Kelly has enough experience now to go left or right, yeah, or come towards midfield for the out balls really. And if he's on a roll and is running at it, then it's going to be very hard to stop the Clare forwards. Shane O'Donnell, the last day, was a big plus for Clare, that he finally, you know, this year Clare supporters will say, when is he going to deliver the 2013 performance again this year?
Because he's been getting a lot of ball. He just seemed unsure of it, very lack of confidence or something.
Just a fraction off, but the last day I thought really, really back to himself. And he's going to be of huge significance in the full forward line. I think they'll probably maybe target John Hanbury, Adrian Truey with O'Donnell and give him quite a bit of space.
Yeah. On John Conlon, and he's, I think, favourite for Hurler of the Year right now. And you think back to the 2013 team, he was there, he was involved, but he wasn't one of the players that you came out of 2013 talking about one of the real stars. What's changed with him over the last 4 or 5 years that he's such an integral part of this team now?
Well, he was always capable of that because we had him at full forward with the club going back 3 or 4 years and he was putting in similar performances. I think it's his best position at full forward. I've always said that. I think as well what really has helped him in terms of his performances is the ball that's coming in is quite good. And we're going that bit more direct this year with Clare, which is great. And we're creating a lot more opportunities as a result. John is able to win the ball if it's coming anyway, really. And he's had that physical strength over all of his markers so far, which makes this duel today now all the more interesting, because obviously Dahi Burke is a powerhouse as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that works.
Are you hearing that in Dahi Burke? It's on the front page of The Independent today that he's a bit of a doubt for this evening.
Yeah, I think it's been all over Galway, and even friends in Clare text me as well. So it'll be interesting to see, all right? But I imagine Dahi be out there no matter what.
Right, he has been named in the team. So on getting the right ball into John Conlon, Tony Kelly's obviously important in that, but is that then where the decision about David McInerney and his ability to pick out the right pass, that actually that may be the biggest decision facing Clare, whether or not to play him at centre-back or just to leave him in at full-back?
Yeah, well, I think David, is talking about striking the ball, he's a great striker of the ball as well, and that's why another reason I would have him out there is just he's such a launch pad from, he can do it even from fullback, so he'd be well able to spray it if he was out the field that bit further.
Does that mean as well if Gareth McInerney's getting some sort of parity with Tony Kelly, or he's keeping Tony Kelly out of the game, you have another option?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and in fairness to the half back line, Jamie Shanahan is well able to deliver a lovely ball in as well. His delivery is excellent, and Shane are the same way. So that's really going to be our launch pad in terms of how well that line performs, is how well it'll have a direct correlation to how well the full forward line goes. You know.
Mm. Anthony, what are your
and
thoughts?
Peter Duggan is the other guy who's a huge option as well, either a full forward, centre forward, wing forward. And I think he's, you know, if you look what's the difference between Clare in the last couple of years, obviously John Conlon, David McInerney had more experience, but Peter Duggan, phenomenal for his club last year in Clare County Champions. He was a one-man show. I mean, some of his club performances were outstanding.
We suffered it, his hands.
And then he brought it forward. Clare, I know there was an 11th tournament over in Boston there last November. Clare trained extremely hard for that, and you know they went out to use that weekend as a building process for panel members getting together, and that was their start to their championship. Mm. I don't think they overtried too hard in the latter parts of the league, and we're happy enough. And that's probably the one downside of all the chat we're having about championship now, that the league will probably suffer a bit. Mm. But apart from their second half, you know, the first 20 minutes of the second half, maybe the last 10 minutes of the first half, but they started really well against Cork. Mm. And, you know, there was nothing in it, even at halftime, nothing in it. And the concern would be that they switched off. And if that happens today, I think Galway could punish them. But when they're on a roll, I think it's going to be really, really hard to stop them. Peter Duggan, Aaron and Tony Kelly, David, really, he comes deep as well and can run and run and run very, very fast, and we'll, you know, you touch in with a couple of points.
When you say switch off, and how does that happen as players? Like, it's a Munster final, we assume that you can't switch off. Is that that you've just been physically worn down by the opposition, that you just can't maintain your concentration, your intensity for a full 70 minutes?
Yeah, I think that's the one fault to this Clare team. I see that they haven't been able to manage them bad periods and matches, Nathan, where, like we see again this year, where the Munster final, it kind of dragged on for 20 or 25 minutes, where a team got on top of them, where you see the better teams over the last couple of years, Galway, Tip, get a couple of scores against them. They're back with a score, two scores, three scores, and they don't let that momentum shift happen for 15 or 20 minutes. So if Galway get on top of Tony Kelly, I saw it down this year in Semple Stadium as well, Tony Kelly had a massive first 20 minutes against Tip. He shot maybe four or five shots at goal, but only converted maybe two of them. Tip got a man marker on him, shut down that supply into their inside line, and now all of a sudden, you know, Tip probably dominated for 25, 30 minutes that game and stretched out to maybe a 4 or 5 point lead, and coming down the home stretch looked like they were going to win it. So Galway, I'd imagine today, will keep as much structure in their backline like they've done all the championship matches. Garage will probably go so far with Tony Kelly. You'd imagine Johnny Cohn then will pick him if he comes drifting out the field, and you'll see a Joe Kenning, Joe Cooney going into that middle third to just get the numbers right, that they're not getting exposed in on supply going inside. So I think you'll see a fairly solid structure from Galway again defensively.
If that wasn't a work, I think Padraig Mannion is the other player that we didn't talk about. If there was to be a man-marking job on Tony Kelly, as Tipperary did in the Munster Championship this year, I think Padraig is probably the most underrated defender around. He's his vision, but he's close marking, he's extremely strong in the air, and he's really smart on the ball. And if he is to man mark Tony Kelly, if it's an option, if things weren't working out in the setup for Galway, I think they'll have primed Padraig for that job.
Yeah, the flow of a game, then that's interesting. On again, maybe that sets up in Galway's favour, that from a Clare point of view, if Galway get a goal, you can't switch off then. That's the moment you need to respond with the next score, with the next couple of scores, because Galway can rack up 1-3, 1-4 very quickly, and then unfortunately the game's gone from you.
Yeah, well, I think like if Galway are to get a goal, it's crucial really that you win your next puck out. That's another massive strength of this Galway team, is how good the half back line is in the air. You can't just puck the ball out long and down on top of them. It's really if you do find yourself, like you say, how does that happen that you would just switch off in a game? If that does happen, I think really you have to concentrate and win the next puck out, and that's how you get back into the game, because if the ball's coming back in as fast, it's easy for a team to get momentum and a run on you then.
Just before we move on to the other semi-final, I want to play a clip from Jackie Tyrrell, who was in studio with Joe earlier in the week, just the 9 All-Ireland medal winners in Jackie Tyrrell's back pocket. And he spoke about how Clare might set up this evening and the importance of Johnny Cohn to the Galway cause.
I'd imagine they'd get Tony Kelly to play the flanks and run the wings, and he did that again Wexford very well, cut down the wings and then over the bar. But the thing for me, I think Galway are well capable of looking after that because they have in Patrick Mannion probably another guy that's probably up there as regards Hurler of the Year, and he's very good at detail and man marking. And a simple switch would be Garold McInerney if he was struggling, or not if he was struggling on Tony. If Tony moved away and he just couldn't get near him and didn't want to leave the centre, well then you put him over on Peter Duggan, and you know there's a great matchup as well for Galway, I reckon. So Galway have Johnny Cohn also there.
Yeah.
Johnny Cohn is very interesting, I think, for Galway because he doesn't get a lot of credit. I often see his ratings after the game and he's 6 and 7, and I can't understand it because
that's a guy people haven't noticed and they're like, oh, I'll give him a 6 or 7.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think he plays that spy role, and like a spy in the NFL is a guy who just sits there and watches the quarterback, and he just quenches fire everywhere. You often see him, the player be up there and he's just looking left and right, seeing where the gaps are, seeing where they're exposed, seeing where they're vulnerable, and just slots back in there. And a lot of the time I've kind of watched it and I think it's very interesting.
Are you seeing that off the TV?
Off the TV and at games.
It's harder to see on the TV.
Yeah, at the games. I went to obviously the Kilkenny Galway games this year. Dáithí Burke is constantly on to Garold McInerney, and Garold McInerney is constantly on verbally to Johnny Cohn.
Right.
Simple adjustments, left, right, drop there. But Johnny Cohn plays that role excellently and just gives that bit of cover there. I've kind of noticed it's a thing that's coming into the game. I think Tipperary flirted with this year with Cottle Barrett midfield, trying to just get that bit of protection there. Kilkenny do it with Conor Fogarty very subtly as well. So it's a role that's evolved in the game, and I think Johnny Cohn plays that very well and doesn't get the credit. And a lot of time he's not hitting the ball. It's just because he's making runs here, he's making runs there. He's just giving that bit of protection to the defence.
Yeah, that was Jackie Tyrrell on, and probably feeds in with a lot what you're saying about Dáithí Burke and Garold McInerney. It sounds as though that Micheál Dunne can hand over a lot of the responsibility to the players on the pitch, that they're very good in-game understanding of what's developing and where the dangers are, which is a huge asset, I'd imagine, for any team to have.
Yeah, I think over the last 5 or 6 years, that centre-forward role has changed so much. Nearly the best players and the best shooters are going into it to open up the field for runners through the middle. So what you do with your six in that instance, the likes of David Burke or Johnny Cohn are nearly playing a second six a lot of the time and just plugging that gap, or they're dropping onto a half forward and letting a Pádraic Mannion drop back on top of the D, or a Garrow's dropping back the D. And it's just making sure that you're compact at the back all the time and you have someone to intercept them balls that are coming into the full forward line. And Galway are very effective and very subtle at doing it. They're changing up all the time. David can drop in and do it. Johnny can drop in and do it. Garrow will do it sometimes. Pádraic will do it sometimes. But they're just communicating between each other and making sure, I suppose, the main shooters and the more attacking threats out the field have been picked up. And maybe the likes of Cathal Malone will be loose a bit more today because he wouldn't be seen as accurate as Tony Kelly. So there are little subtle things that will be going on in the middle third today, and you know, I think they're very interesting off camera to watch them and how they deal with that defensive side of it.
Particularly if Clare are chasing the game in the last 10 minutes. I think we saw last year Waterford, I thought, lost the plot a small bit, just diverted from script a small bit in the last 10 minutes. They went long and boomed a lot of puckouts. Even went short for a few puckouts, then received the puckout and lashed it down. I think if Clare are chasing the game or 2 or 3 points down going into the last 5 to 7 minutes, Galway will really draw on that. What Tony's explained there and what you've explained there, Nathan, and what we've heard, that they'll sit back there, but they will coordinate it. And one of the biggest things for a defender now is hugely to be strong on communication and being able to read and instruct and your fellow players to, you know, let's cover this off, let's cover that off. And there's a lot more of that now in the game than maybe 10 years ago, 5 years ago even. There's a huge amount of, hey, I suppose players will sit down and they'll analyse it and they'll see where these scores come from. And, you know, it makes, probably goes unnoticed as well, but a lot, and it makes for better games for sure.
So on puckouts then, they're going to be hugely important tomorrow, I'm sure, in the game between Cork and Limerick. Facing Cork, do you have to push right up on the Cork defence on Anthony Nash's puckouts and force him to go long?
Well, I think that's probably what he wants, because like their half forward line then go very close into the opposition goal and leave that space out in front of him. So if you're pushing up, Nash will just put it in front of the likes of Harnedy and Luke Mead and those lads. Well, Harnedy can win it anyway if it's coming long, but he puts it in front of the likes of Luke Mead so that he can run onto it. So with Nash, I mean, he's just so good that it's just going to be a threat, and it's a strength in their game. But you can still beat them without, like, we kind of got overly bogged down in how we were going to treat Nash's pockets in last year's Munster final, to our own detriment, I think. You can prepare somewhat for it, but I mean, at the end of the day, he's got an excellent pocket and they're going to win a lot of them.
So you just meant you just confused yourselves in the end?
I thought so, yeah. From looking on, we had the two wing forwards drop back to the wing back position for every puck out. And they spent basically, just expended all their energy running up and back that channel for the game, and they didn't really contribute too much to the actual game. I suppose that was not good for us.
Well, Cork are excellent there, Nathan, right? If you're dropping your half forward line back onto that 65 area, they'll actually go short to a half back or a full back, and he'll carry to the 45 and he'll clear all that traffic, and the Cork full forward line will sit so deep in on the end line that it's nearly hopping into their hand on the 21, and it's too far to a half back or a half forward to get back and close that. So they're able to vary it two or three different ways, and that's the challenge, I suppose, playing against them.
What an unbelievable asset to have in Anthony Nash. That he probably takes up more time for the opposition coaches than any other player in that Cork team.
Well, he's miles ahead of anybody else. He's the best in the game. And you see all the other goalies now and other teams have, you know, tried to copy that and to get there as well. And it's a skill that has got really, really strong with goalies. And if they're not able to, I suppose, garner the loopy shots out, really. And a lot of goalies came in and they had loopy shots. And if you're not able to send an arrow of a shot, really, that you're winning the ball right in front of you as a half forward, you know, it's something you look at now as much as in shot stopping as for a goalie. But if you are to give it to somebody and say you can't become preoccupied with it, but if, again, depends on the stage of the game. And if it's late on and Limerick are maybe up a point or two, you probably would err in sitting that bit more, but you wouldn't be giving it to their, you would push up to their on their half backs and midfield, because you don't want Fitzgibbon and these guys getting the ball, because it'll be a score. But you'd give it to the cornerbacks. You'd probably give it to the cornerbacks. You'd probably say to these cornerbacks are, you know. But with Donoghue there this year, they just bomb up the field.
Yeah,
the new cornerback now just gets it and he's comfortable on the ball. Off he goes. He just doesn't get it and lash it up, you know. So, but you probably would err on giving it to their cornerbacks, because you would not allow any of the Cork half backs or midfielders to come onto a ball, because it's a score straight off.
There's one part of it which is the skill, which obviously Anthony Nash has, to be able to drill the ball 80, 90 yards if needs be to a precise target. The other side is having the intelligence to pick out the right ball and realise what the opposition are doing against you and be able to overcome that quite quickly in the middle of a game. What teams have managed to rattle him? What teams have got inside his head, and what does get inside his head?
If you take the slitters away from him, I said a clear lad.
Yeah, they tried that. It didn't work.
In the crowd. I think teams have had success, Nathan, at different periods in games, but to sustain it is the hard thing. But as Derek was saying, it's only one phase of the game. You know, what the player, if you can get a 50-50 contest between the cornerback and the corner forward, or the half back and the half forward, and he gets some sort of contact in the ball and slows down that attack, well then straight away you're giving everyone else a chance to get there.
Yeah.
So, you know,
win your individual battle.
Yeah,
simple as that.
Yeah. It's nearly to that point where you just have to nearly trust your instincts out the field to try and read what he's doing and beat your man to that ball.
Why do we still have doubts about this Cork team when you can pretty much run through every line and there's such unbelievable talent there?
I thought they were probably the most, last year's semi-final. They have the experience of the semi-final this year. I mean, I thought they controlled the game after the quarters of the match. They were really unfortunate, really sending off. And a ball that should have been cleared, really a mistake at corner in the cornerback position, and Austin Leeson, you know, banged a brilliant ball across and extends the back of the net. And they controlled that game, and in the same way.
They were just
the
coming into it before that red card.
Yeah, so, I mean, they have that experience, and again, I think that will sand them tomorrow in the last 5 to 10 minutes, and it'll be that close. There's no doubt. But they'll be in that position before, you know, there'll be two teams there tomorrow. The same as today, 10 minutes ago, can you win this or not? And sometimes the coolest head or picking the best pass, or rather than, you know, if it's goal chances are on last year for Waterford, they took them at that point, which was the subtle difference with Cork. I think Cork learned that this year, and they'll go for the jugular.
Yeah, I wouldn't have too many doubts about that Cork team now, to be honest with you. I'm very impressed with them this year. Like, even the game said that they didn't play all that well, they weren't beating them, and they hung in there. And I mean, they're unbeaten against Clare. Clare played their best hurling in years in the first half, and even for the first 35 minutes, but they still only were 4 points up at half time, and they pulled it out in the second half. So, like, depending now on whether Seamus Harney is fully fit or not, I'd fancy them for that tomorrow.
And then Patrick Horgan, I think.
Yeah.
I mean,
brilliant player.
He's so much class that he can win a game, really. He can spin and score a point where no other forward probably in the country can do that today, you know, as with the pace and the accuracy they have. So again, big men step up as well at, you know, in crucial times. And yeah, Harnett, he's really, really tough in the air, and he's really will drive. He will drive at the Limerick defence. Having said that, I mean, we've seen Limerick the last day to come back there and to show the composure they showed in the last 5 to 10 minutes against Kilkenny is really going to help them. It might come a year too soon for them. I think they have a lot of young guys there. We played them on a couple of challenge matches, and they have a huge abundance of players, probably a lot of them at the same level. But if you were a betting man for the next few years with the underage structure that has come through in Limerick, you know, I think Cork are coming second to that. I think Clare have slipped a bit.
Unfortunately.
What would you do? So you mentioned Harnedy, much like Doughty Burke, there's been a lot of talk about Harnedy this week and his injury problems and whether he's going to start or whether he's not. As a coach, do you leave that up to your medical staff and it's a straight yes or no? Or do you look at it that he's such an important player to what you want to do? It's an All-Ireland semi-final. Do we just put him out there and if he has to come off after 20 minutes, we've taken the risk?
I think the medics, you know, the physios and the doctors now got so really, really, really good and have massive experience. I know in the Dublin setup, James has, you know, he's Leinster rugby experience for a number of years. He's with the Dublin footballers for a number of years. His own profession. I mean, they're probably, these guys are as good as what's in the world, really. And you have to leave it up to these guys. And they're so competent and so well able to call it. They'll say, listen, that's madness if you think we can start him. They'll say it straight out.
Yeah. I think the level of athletes you're dealing with now, Anthony, that you if you're carrying Anthony at all and you're 10% short or 15% short,
you'll be found out.
You're not getting to the ball, like, you know, and that's you're playing with 14 men straight away. So players will nearly put their hand up and say, that's why we've a squad of 35 or 6. That
some will want to play though, but the physio and the doc will always sort of say this is going to go.
I'd say there's no doubt but that he will start. I'd say, but as Tony says, even if you are carrying Anton, it's the margins are so small now, and players you're marking are so good that even if you're carrying a small bit, you'll be off your game, and you can go from being a very good player with carrying injury to a very bad player if you're injured out there. So he'll need to gauge that himself, I suppose, as the game goes on tomorrow.
And when it's out there all week, whoever's marking you is going to know well that there might be a slight doubt there and be testing it early on. Just on Cork then, Jamie Wall, who's head coach at Mary Eye at the moment, he was in studio yesterday with Adrian and Owen talking about the differences in this Cork side from last year to this year.
I just think, look, I think the scoreline at the end of the semi-final last year was hugely flattering and to Waterford, and not in a... They deserve to win the game, absolutely, but I think, you know, it was slightly skewed by the fact that Damien Callaghan got a second yellow and got sent off after, you know, I think there was only a point or two in the game at that stage. You know, and in that last 5-6 minutes kind of garbage time, as it's been called, Watford got a goal as well, you know, so that kind of put a bit of gloss on it that maybe wasn't there, whereas the game was probably maybe a 3 or 4 point victory for Waterford. It was a Waterford win all the same, you know, and it always was, like, and I'm certainly not saying that it wasn't deserved, but I think, you know, just the margin of the defeat was probably a small bit bigger than it ever really should have been in terms of what the gap between the two teams was. Different for Cork this year, I just think they're a year further down the tracks. I think, like, you know, I actually it's just one of the quotes that stuck out in my mind was one of yours there about a month ago, where I think Cork had burst onto the scene at the start of the Munster Championship, and you were talking to Jura here, and you just said, it was today at the Tipperary game actually, and you said, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot about all these good young Cork players at half time.
Yeah, we kind of discounted them.
Yeah, and then you said, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot about all these good young Cork players, and then at full time you said, oh yeah, I can't believe I forgot how young all these good Cork players were. Yeah. With that bit of inconsistency. So I think, like, they're another year down the tracks, you know. I mean, they've had a few more learning experiences this year in terms of that Tipperary game, you know, the slightly Jekyll and Hyde nature of that. You know, not closing out the game against Limerick against 14. And I think, to be honest, I think those are massive, good things, because I know a lot of this Cork team are 23, 24, 25, you know, which is quite young. A lot of them are 23, you know, are young guys. And I think they're still learning the game, and they're still learning how to win games and close out games.
James O'Connor was writing this week, and he was interesting, talking about how he feels Cork are a player-led team now, that he's seen at times John Myler coming out of the dressing room early at halftime, even at the Munster final, and leaving the players to sort it out for themselves. And you think back to that opening game at Round Robin against Clare when there was the injury and the Cork players and Anthony Nash was out and they went on and had their best spell of the game then. Is that something that is very much... it's player-led but manager-led to let them at it, or is it something that actually comes with a bit of experience and players being together and comfortable with each other after a while?
Yeah, well, like we spoke kind of with Galway, where they're leading, they're talking, they're communicating with McInerney, Cohen and Burke, but they're just of that age group there where, say, the likes of Horgan, Harnedy, Bill Cooper, Dan Kearney and Nash at the back are just in their prime now, and they're naturally going to be the leaders of the team because they're all at that age, and they're leading it very well, I would say.
Cadigan at centre back. He's massive experience behind him.
They're at an age where they're happy to be a bit more honest with each other.
Yeah, and I think it's gone that way as well, to answer your question. I think, you know, it's open as well in management. Do because players are on the field. Like, I mean, the 6 or 8 or 10 of the management backup team are off stage, really. You do have to get good at it, and you give X amount of it, most definitely, and you encourage it, and you encourage them. I think they have to talk it through as well. I think there's probably too much of managers or coaches telling players, and in particular, I think the style has changed as well over the last. So if you were playing, you know, centre back or wing back, Nathan, you know, I say, what worked well for you today? What areas have you got better at? And we want you to be honest. And it isn't, I'm afraid to tell the manager or the coach. It's better if you say, listen, these 3 things, I couldn't handle Tony Kelly coming down the wing there. What should I do? Or when should I go? Or, you know, it's the nature of coaching has changed, and given that exposure to players. And if the player can't explain it, or at least know, you know, what do I have to get better at, or what worked well for me? That's the other thing. What's really working well for me? And articulate that, and articulate it to his other lads around him and say, give me the ball this way, or I want to go that way, or all the things that probably Tony works on with teams.
Yeah, Tony, is that the sort of thing that you find yourself working a lot more on now, that players, getting them to take personal responsibility, not to always be looking at the sideline?
Yeah, like, I think as a manager or coach, we can only work off our own experiences, and a lot of management teams and coaches are working off maybe an era where it was completely different, where the manager was the final voice on everything, the game plan, the communication, the motivation, everything. And now, you know, a group of 40 people, you have to throw that around and realise that there's other opinions, and you need to find out the awareness of players and coaches around what we're doing well and what we need to improve on. And I think John Myler probably came into the start of that dressing room, gave us 1 or 2 points from the management, and then left to the players. And I think putting that responsibility back on them, you know, they're going out in the field saying, lads, let's take a hold of this and grab hold of it. And it's given them confidence too, that he's placing that trust in them, that he's going out the door, he backs their judgment and decision making. And it was a tough first half for them, but they turned around maybe 10 minutes before half time, where they got the goal and the point to bring it back to, you know, I think 4 or 5 before half time. And that was a different atmosphere going into half time then. And they probably knew that if they could continue on that 10 minutes before half time, that they had a right chance of really turning the score around and putting Clare under more pressure.
Is that where maybe Limerick are still a couple of years behind?
Yeah, no, there might be. I mean, I don't mean anything bad on that, and I'm damn sure they're all able to explain, you know, the scenarios and go through. But I think there's a small bit maybe of experience comes with it, as Derek said there. In that experience helps you to be able to do that. But as an interest as a coach, I'd be hugely interested in that and want to go that way a bit more, because I think that's the way the games have gone and players have gone in all sports, but particularly in hurling, because the game is so dynamic, so fast. If you're not able to figure it out, and the second part of that, if you're not able to be honest and say, well, here, this is what's working well, I need more cover, or, you know, I need the ball played a certain, you know, to give me more advantage to take on the game, and this is the best way we have of scoring. So that those type of systems and that openness with players, it has to be there, and I think the most successful teams are going to be that. And I've no doubt John Kiely and his management team will have that in abundance as well. But it just, the final part of that picture is having the experience to do that, and that's vital.
Would you start Shane Dowling tomorrow?
I mean, he probably won't. I don't think he is going to start.
He's named among the substitutes.
Yeah, I don't think they will start him.
To come in late.
I'd say, yeah, I mean, he'll make a huge impact coming in off the bench if he gets the chance. But their full forward line with Gillan, Mulcahy and Flanagan's working really well. Flanagan maybe had an opportunity to take a few more goals, but just the touch didn't go right from against Kilkenny. But if he gets those chances again, he'll need to take them on Sunday.
Peter Casey's a guy that came in the last day too, and my God, like, to get into the pitch of that game, the where it was at and the crucial stage, and geez, he was getting ball into his hands so quickly. He was making right decisions, shooting at the right time. His hands were so quick, and I remember watching him last year in the Under-21 Championship. He was hitting 1-4, 1-5 from play, and I think he's going to be even a bigger threat than Shane Dowling coming in off the bench tomorrow, and I think Cork will have to be well prepared for him as well, because he's a match winner coming in.
Yeah, quite a bit of strength and depth then. You look at some of the veterans on that bench as well, the likes of Seamus Hickey there. If you need a like-for-like replacement, you're not looking to a kid to come in.
No, at full-back, it's an ideal... a fullback replacement, probably you were looking for experience, really. You probably don't want to throw a 21-year-old in. So I'd say that's what to target Seamus for. And he's fairly unlucky to lose out because there's a lot of competition there. I think Tony's point there, three in the Pearcy guys coming off the bench the last day, a massive contribution. I think the bench is as well. We've talked about a lot of different aspects, but the bench in the games now. And probably we'll see today, Saturday, but we definitely will see tomorrow, are very telling. And to have the composure, as we've talked about, of getting scores and key scores when the pitch of the game is really, really fast, is an extra bonus point for Limerick.
These semi-finals, if you look over the last couple of years, Galway probably fairly comfortable coming home the home stretch against Waterford last year, Tipp the year previously, ramped home against Kilkenny. And if you go back over the semi-finals, you've had three semi-finals where Galway got tipped by a point. Tomorrow's matches, that experience that Cork have and Galway built up, winning semi-finals and been in 3 and 4 in All-Ireland finals, that's invaluable, because you're not getting carried away in the emotion of the occasion or the emotion of the match, or getting too high after a score or getting too low after conceding. And I think the experience the older lads have of managing games, I think it'll be just too much with Cork and Galway. I think they just have that experience how to manage that game at the right times. And that just comes from experience playing in that environment repeatedly over the years. You can coach a certain amount of it, but I think the experience is just invaluable. And I think that's a huge advantage to both of them teams going into today and tomorrow.
Tony O'Gregan, Derek Honan and Anthony Cunningham in studio. We'll let you go in a moment, lads. We've had quite a few texts coming in over the last hour or so. Sean Kane on Twitter: obviously it's an All-Ireland semi-final, but realistically, if Galway win this by 10 points or more today, will anyone at all be surprised? Clare don't have the consistency or overall skill to go up against this Galway side. This could be a cricket score.
Man. He's on the sauce early today.
Cricket score, no. There, so. Boys, if you've forgotten Limerick, in Crow Park as well, Kevin in Limerick. We're not travelling for fun. Come on, the Treaty Boys. Well, I think we've given Limerick a bit of chat there, and you all feel that they've got a fair, decent chance tomorrow. Dahi Regan on Facebook. I'm not sure if it's our Dahi or maybe it's another one, but would Anthony consider the Offaly football job? He has a big reputation in football circles.
Dual manager.
Well, we need the exclusive.
I just tip away at the hurling, I think, for a moment.
No, dual management, no.
No, nothing.
Anthony had a dual role finishing up with us, and I think it was your first year, Anthony, in 12, and you got the club final the same year, but Cyril Donlan used to slag him. He didn't know whether he was taking the bag of footballs out of the boot or the slitters.
I had two different gear bags. A black one for Gary Castle and a maroon one for Galway. If you got the gear bag wrong going to training, yeah, you'd be fairly pulled up.
You're not going to do it again then, that's what you're saying. No comment.
Oh God, no. There's loads and loads of guys out there. It's surprising. I was reading that the amount of inter-county managers that are in football, I think it's 9 and 2 or 3 in hurling, that are open. Mm-hmm. The turnaround of managers now is getting, it's huge.
Yeah, particularly with the sort of, shall we say, second tier counties. Yeah. It seems you go in for a year, and if there isn't an instant turnaround, you let somebody else at it.
Yeah, and really, really difficult jobs. And I was thinking of that today, driving up. Some traffic going up from the west there today, because a lot of the Clare guys are getting used to the Galway motorway now. sometimes supporters probably don't realise, Galway supporters have been at all these All-Ireland semi-finals and finals last 2 years. Clare, 2013, huge run of Munster this year, huge run last year of Munster, now back again up to Croke Park again today, since 2000, first time since 2013. Other counties, like we take the Roscommons, the Westmeads, the Offalys, you know, unfortunately don't get those days out now, and there are, you know, huge strong football guys and hurling guys there, and the GAA is their passion, and they just want to be travelling and supporting their county, and it's just unfortunate that I see a lot, because I live in the Midlands, that they'll never get a chance. Really, it's really, really hard to make a breakthrough.
Yeah, I'd say the Roscommon footballers would prefer to be anywhere but Crow Park next Sunday. But if you go up against Dublin in a bit of a dead rubber. Owen Fleming on Twitter: why can't the GEA link in with any of the technical colleges around the country? I guarantee 100% they'd be able to make a copy of Hawkeye at a fraction of the cost for the county grounds without Hawkeye. I'm fairly sure Hawkeye have got their business in order, and you're not allowed to just do some sort of cheap imitation. If it had, the GEA would have gone down that route, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I'd say probably the systems probably would get cheaper. There's also my this is a funny story. My dentist is a Mad Mayo man, but he cannot understand how there isn't a sensor in his litter. So that when it passed the post, that
would have helped for Aston Gleeson's goal earlier. But I mean, I can't understand how the umpire didn't see it. Not to mind the sensor. Like, in fairness, like, the umpire's only 2 yards from it. Like,
yeah.
But the refs, that we were talking about the refs earlier, they've been let down by their umpires really in the main talking points this year. Like, with Reedy's sending off in Clare, and that goal in the Waterford game. Like, I mean. You have four umpires, your ref, and you have seven officials. Like, they should be able to.
Well, that's the next text we had from Darren in Galway. Is would there be an argument to have two refs on the pitch for hurling? The speed of the slither going from end to end means that the ref struggles to keep up with the game. A ref in each half would be better. We sort of are in limbo as to what the role of umpires is meant to be and how qualified they are for that role, whether they're just there to raise a white or green flag and look up and see if it went over the bar or not, which is difficult enough with a slither going at 120 miles an hour, or whether they're meant to be essentially assistant referees, which some of them probably embrace and some of them don't. Do you have any great idea when you're going into a game as to how involved an umpire is going to be?
You don't.
Some referees use them more than others.
You don't. There are probably one or two of their umpires that they trust a bit more. Probably have picked that up over the years. And they'll go to those guys, the smarter referees, the Ryan Gavins of this world, and they would use probably one or two of their umpires for something that happened out of the field.
But
will it come the day that referees will replace umpires? Could happen for the championship matches.
Makes sense.
I think you'll come to a point in 3 to 5 years, like the Aussie rules, you'll have a ref for either side of the pitch. There's loads of officials there in match day. We have fourth and fifth officials. What are they all doing? Like, you know, get two refs in there, one half the pitch. He doesn't have to use half as much energy then up and down. And I think technology, the way it's moving, we won't have any umpires. It'll be in the referee's ear and there'll be someone recording the score and it'll be just going up on the board and the play will be continued, I think, with a chip or whatever it is.
I'd be slightly worried, I think, about two refs on one field because, like, from game to game, you know, ourselves, like, they're, some of them are calling freeze, the other lads aren't calling freeze. So, like, you could be doing the same thing in the backs and getting penalised for it, and then the second half you're getting away with it, like, because they just have a different view on it. I think I'd be probably more in favour of just the umpires taking more responsibility or putting in, as you say, a more qualified umpire or a ref as an umpire. But I think in terms of actually calling freeze and that from the play, I think it would probably, just for the sake and consistency of the game, I think the one referee probably has to do that, in my opinion. But
Give us your predictions, lads. Anthony, who will be playing in the All-Ireland final?
I think Galway between 1 and 3 points today. And I thought as well the weekend that there could be an upset. And if I was to go for an upset, Limerick, maybe just to edge out, if you were to look for an upset. But
Derek, you've been sandwiched between these two Galway men for the last hour. Have they convinced you that Clare haven't a hope in hell? A cricket score is what our texter feels.
When I was when the draw came out and we were playing Galway, I think straight away I kind of thought, having watched them in the Leinster final, that they had a stronger team, and I probably am more going in hope rather than confidence today. But actually, as the week went on, I am getting that bit more confident. Maybe by the time it shows in, I'll think Clare are going to win, but I think that Galway probably have that edge on us.
And what about tomorrow?
Providing that James Hannity is fully fit, I would say that Cork will win that.
And Tony?
Galway for me this evening, I think they're just further down the line than Clare at the moment. And the second game then tomorrow, if Hannity's out, we go back to the Munster final when they need a bit of inspiration before half time. I think he created the 1-1 and the second half as well, he got a goal as well. So if he's out, I'd give a huge advantage to Limerick tomorrow, and I think that'll have a huge bearing if he is, because I see Lehan getting shut down at times. You know, if Harney's not a ball winner in the half forward line now, all of a sudden Cork have lost two really strong ball winners, and I think if he's out, definitely advantage Limerick tomorrow, and they might steal it by 2 or 3 points.
Great stuff, lads. Tony O'Gregan, Dara Conan, Anthony Cunningham, thanks a lot for your patience and joining us in studio this afternoon. Enjoy the game this evening. We're going to take a very quick break.
Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.